Well, hello. This is a bit of a surprise, actually, I have to say. There I was in that story that Caroline was reading to us, and all of a sudden, I came to life. And this story, of course, let me put this down just a moment, been known forever after as the story of the prodigal son. Now, I'm not the prodigal son. I'm actually the father in the story. And in any case, I got two sons. So it's always seemed to me a bit of a disappointment that that's what the story got told. But anyway, here I am, come to life as Jesus intended, really. A bit like those books, I don't know if you've read them in your culture, by Cornelia Funke about Inkheart, where when somebody reads a story, some of the characters come into life and interact with the real life people. And look, he's actually given me a script so that I don't lose my place, although I don't think I could ever forget that story. So okay, I am actually a fictional character, but Jesus is real. And the people that Jesus was talking to were real. Do you remember them? Do you read them there at that first part of the story? Those religious people there in the first few verses, the people who were keeping all the rules, they were always there in the church or the synagogue or wherever it was, doing all the right God stuff. And they saw Jesus being friendly with all the wrong people, the people they despised, tax collectors for a start, prostitutes, sinners, they called them. And Jesus was actually going off and eating with them and going to their parties. And so they confronted him with this. They condemned him for it. And they said, look, Jesus, don't you take sin seriously? You shouldn't mix with people like that, or you might end up getting what's coming to them. And so Jesus invented me, a father. And I'm sure that actually he was probably thinking of his own father in what he said, as well as himself, of course, in all the things that he made me think and do. So anyway, let me introduce myself again. I'm pretty blessed, really, by God. I've become quite wealthy. I've got some good land that I'm farming. I've got flocks of sheep and goats and even some cattle. I've got servants. I've got a good house in the village. In fact, our house is on the higher ground up in the center of the town. We've got two stories, upper rooms big enough for a party and musicians, a nice courtyard outside where the kids can play. I'm actually pretty well the most senior man in the village, very respected and honored VIP. And I got these two sons. And so, of course, they will inherit all that I've got, my land, my flocks, my wealth, when I die. And my eldest son, he'll get 2/3, the double portion. My younger son, he'll get 1/3. And that's a good future for them, something to look forward to, even though, of course, it's a long way off, we all hope still, because it will come after I die. But then one day, and the memory still shocks me, my younger son came to me and he said, okay, Father, I want my share of the inheritance now. I'm not going to wait. I don't want it sometime in the future. I want it here and now, my share of the land and the flocks. Come on. Such a thing is unheard of in our country. There's no provision for it, not even in our laws. I mean, a father can decide which part of his estate he's going to give to which sons, but for a son to want to receive it before his father's dead was deeply insulting. It was as if he was wanting me to die, that he couldn't wait till I was dead. Actually, would rather I was dead so he could have it. It was like a wound in my heart. Because I knew that actually if I gave him what he wanted, all he really wanted to do was to take it, leave home, go away, get his freedom, and forget about me. And I think Jesus was making me feel the way his own Father God must feel. When you human beings, you real ones, when you actually choose to walk away from God and take all that God gives you every day of your life and then just live your life as if God didn't exist. I mean, what do you think it was like for God the Father? What do you think it's still like for him when you choose to ignore him, to refuse to give thanks to him, to live here in God's world as if God were dead? Well, that's how I felt. So what should I do? What would you have done? I knew what the village would have expected and everybody would expect me to do. I should have thrashed him. I should have slapped him in the face. I should have refused his demand. I should have cut his inheritance completely as a punishment. I could have disowned him as my son, wanting me dead. I could have shown him that I was still very much alive and who was in charge. But I didn't. I didn't do any of those things. See, I loved that boy. And so I did what he asked. I divided up the inheritance. I gave him ownership, title deeds to his share of the land. And the rest of the household, my wife and everybody in the household, was completely shocked that I allowed myself to be treated like that. And actually, so was the whole village, because they found out pretty soon, pretty quickly, because you see, what my son did was he put my share of my property that I'd handed over to him, and he put it up for sale, and he got a buyer for it in a few days. A few days! I mean, transfers of land in our country sometimes could take months, even years. But he had to do it quick, because the whole village, when they heard what he has done, were so angry with him. They condemned him. He'd brought disgrace on me, the respected father of the village, and on the whole family. They accused him. They despised him. So he put it up for sale, accepted the very first offer he could get, took the money, and left. Left home. Left the village. I mean, he had to. He couldn't live any longer in the house of the father that he wanted dead, and he couldn't live any longer in the village that he had disgraced. And as far as we were concerned, as far as our family was concerned, indeed, as far as he was concerned, he was as good as dead, cut off. But I loved that boy. Did I tell you that? I loved that boy. Even though he no longer loved me, even though he wanted me dead, even though he had taken what was mine and gone off on his own, he was still my son, and I wanted him back. Well, I've got a few business contacts, fairly extensive around the place, and I asked one of my friends, I said, look, when you travel, could you just look out for my son, and if you find him, just bring me back some news of how he's doing? And so he did. And so I heard that my son had not only left the village, he'd actually left the country. And he'd gone off to some foreign land, a land of Gentiles, a land of pagans, which was even more shameful and a disgrace for me to hear. And of course, the whole village knew it. There's no secrets in our time. It was terribly disgraceful for them as well. But my friend said, well, you know, your son, oh, he's doing okay. He's spending all your money. He's having a good time. He's got lots of friends. Not a care in the world. Except, of course, that he was doing it all with the wealth that was really mine, and he couldn't care less about me. So that was hurtful. That was painful. Because I still loved him. Did I tell you that? And then one day, my friend brought terrible news. He says, look, that country where your son's gone, there's been a drought now for several years, and the food has run out. There's a famine. And your son has spent all his money, and the food is scarce anyway. And he's got no money left, and he's hired himself out to a farmer in that country to work for him in the farm. And it's a pig farm. And there's my son, my heir, living like a slave with unclean animals in a foreign Gentile pagan land. And it broke my heart. And I wept that night. The village, well, they heard the news too, of course. These things get around. And they, the village, all the people, they were very satisfied with this. Serve him right, they were saying. He's only got what he deserved for the way he treated his loving father. This is what happens to sinners like him, and it's just right too. And then I realized that Jesus knew these real people who were listening to him as he made me up and spoke to them, that Jesus knew that those real people he was talking to would actually agree with the people in the village, in the story. All those religious people who kept all the rules and did all the right God stuff, they'd be saying, good story, Jesus. Good ending. We're glad now. We see that you do understand just how serious sin is, even though we're still not happy with the company you're keeping. But at least you realize, don't you, Jesus, that sinners come to a sticky end and that they deserve what they get, just like that son in your story. But Jesus hadn't finished the story, and I haven't finished mine. See, I always thought that my son would probably never return home, but when I heard that he was so desperate, I began to hope that maybe just being so desperate would drive him back to our family. So do you remember I told you just a little while earlier that my house, our house, our family house, which is one of the largest in the village, is actually on a bit of a hill. We're up there at the upper end of the village, and we've got upper rooms as well, from which you can see not only over the town and through the streets, but actually out to the open countryside. And so I started going up there every morning, just as it was getting light, just to spend an hour or two watching there, because I knew that if my son was going to come back at all, he'd probably try to sneak in before everybody was up, before the village was up and about, so that he could get in and sneak through the village and get to our home. So I watched. I went there every day. I watched. I waited. And one day, I saw him. There he was, out in the distance, out in the countryside. Pitiful sight he was, but I knew him. My son. I knew him a mile off. But the trouble was, I knew what would happen if he reached the street at the entrance to our village, because he timed it wrong. People were already up and about. I could hear them down in the street. Shops were opening. People were calling to one another. And I knew that if he got to the streets of our village, I knew what they were going to do to him. They would condemn him. They hated him. They were rejecting him already. They told me so. They never wanted him back. So they would abuse him, they'd probably spit at him, they'd throw stones at him, they'd probably set the dogs on him. They'd probably end up beating him up for the disgrace that he'd brought on the village and throw him out. And I couldn't let that happen. But there's only one way I could stop it happening. And that was, I had to get to him first. And so I rushed down from that room. And I rushed out into the street, and I called my servants to follow me, and then I did something that I hadn't done since I was a boy. I ran. Now, you need to understand something, that in my country and culture and our village, older, respected men just don't run, ever. Because you see, in order to run, you have to take your long robe, which is reaching right to the ground, and hoist it up if you're going to run. And that means you're going to expose your legs. And that was a shameful, disgraceful thing to do in our culture. For a man or for a woman to expose their legs in public was just not done. And so for that reason, you just do not run in public. But I ran. I ran down that street, and people, they were so shocked. They stared, they pointed. Some of them even laughed at me. They could not believe it. Some of them jeered. My servants coming behind me, they were so embarrassed, they could hardly keep up. Even the little boys, the little urchins in the village, they were running alongside, mimicking me and laughing at me. It was deeply humiliating, more than embarrassing. It was shameful. But all I could think of was my son. And the joy of meeting him again. And for that joy that was ahead of me, I endured that street. And I just thought nothing of the shame that was mine. In fact, what I was doing was I put myself in the place where my son would be if I didn't get to him first. All this abuse and shame would be his if he ever came into this street. He was the one who deserved it. I was the one who took it. So I humbled myself to save him. I loved him so much that I bore that shame for him. I ran. I ran to him. And when he saw me coming, he recognized me, of course. And he stopped because he was just as shocked and amazed to see me as the people behind me were shocked and amazed to see me running. And he was about to fall at my feet. I suppose he probably wanted to kiss my feet, but I grabbed him first. I threw my arms around him. Boy, did he stink. He was in rags. But I kissed him. I kissed him. My runaway son. My disgrace of a son. And there, in front of all these people who were gathering, I did the very opposite of what they expected. They just couldn't believe. After all the dishonor that he had brought on me and on our village, I gave him the honor of a kiss. The greeting that you give to someone you honor. I kissed him. And then he sort of staggered back a little bit. And he made a little speech. It almost sounded as if he'd rehearsed it. He said, Father, he said, he hadn't actually said that word when he left home, but he said, Father, I've sinned, I know, against God and against you. And as things stand at the moment, I realize that I'm not worthy to be called your son. And then he stopped. And I thought he was going to say something more, but he just stopped and he stood there looking at me with his eyes wide with amazement and tears. And of course, the crowd was gathering around because word had spread right up through the town like wildfire. And so I knew that I needed people to understand that what I was doing was not some moment of emotional madness. So I turned to my servants who were there and I gave them some sharp orders, quick as I could and as loud as I could so that everybody could hear. I said, quick, back to the house, fetch the robe, the best one. You know that one that I keep for the really important occasions? Bring me that one. And bring my ring, the signet ring, the one that gives authority within the house and trust within the family. And for goodness sake, bring some sandals. Only slaves and boys run around with bare feet. And my son isn't coming to town barefoot. Bring some sandals to put on his feet. And so the fastest of my servants ran off to do that. And I said to two more, others of my servants, I said, and also, look, I said, this evening we're going to have a party. Again, I said it loud enough for everybody to hear. We're going to celebrate what's happened today. So get a goat from the flock and sacrifice it for a feast. No, wait, that's not enough. Because I want the whole village to be invited, I called out to them all. I said, kill the fatted calf. We need enough meat for everybody. I want the whole village to understand and accept what I've done for this son of mine and to honor me by coming to celebrate and rejoice with me. Well, by then the other servant had come back with the robe. I took my best robe and I put it on my son. And I put the signet ring of our family on his finger. And I tied the sandals around his feet. And I gave him back his dignity and his belonging and his self-respect. I gave him back his life, really. And as I did so, I announced to this whole crowd, I said, this is my son, I said. They thought I'd disowned him long ago. He was dead, I said, and he was indeed. They'd all treated him as dead. But I have given him his life back, I said. He was lost, but I'm rescuing him and restoring him. And then we walked back together with my arm around him through that street, up through the town, having saved him from the humiliation that he would have got if I hadn't got to him first. When we got back inside the house, I asked them, I said, it looked like you were going to say something else to me out there, but you didn't. What were you going to say when you stopped? And he said to me, oh, he said, Father, he said, I was so desperate way out there in that foreign land, I can hardly tell you about it. There was no food. I was starving with hunger. I had no money to buy any food, even if there'd been any. I actually envied the pigs that I was feeding. I even wanted to be a pig, if only I could have eaten what they were eating, which of course I couldn't. And when I begged people for food, they just walked by. Nobody gave me anything. So I became so desperate that I thought, I said, I've really got no choice. Either I'm going to starve to death here, or I'll go back to my father. But I said to my father, he said to me, I can't imagine ever being your son again. But then I came up with this plan. I thought, if only I can get you to listen to me one more time, you know, we could do a deal. I could work for you, Father, and you could pay me my wages. And then if I get enough, I can pay you back what I owe you. And then maybe I can be your son again, if only I can pay you back what I owe. Well, that was my plan, he said. But then when I saw you running towards me and out of the town to meet me, and I realized what that cost you, and I could hear the laughter and the mockery, you loved me enough to suffer that humiliation for my sake, and then you embraced me and you kissed me like a son, I couldn't say any more. In fact, the whole idea of doing a deal seemed a pretty crazy plan. So I just shut up. And indeed it was. I didn't tell him, but actually it was a crazy idea. I almost laughed to think how stupid it was. I mean, the idea that he could pay me back with money that I would pay him in the first place, take my money to pay what he owed me. And in any case, even if he had worked as a servant all his life, he could never make up for the shame and the disgrace that he brought on me, not to mention all the pain, the anger and the grief of what he'd done. He couldn't repay that debt. And I didn't want him to. He was my son, not my servant. I didn't want him back as a slave. But the only thing that would restore him to me as my son was what I had just done. And that was out of my love and grace for him. And at that point in the story, of course, Jesus was looking directly at those religious people. Do you remember all those people who kept all the rules and did all the right God stuff? And it's as if Jesus was saying to them, look, if my Father and I choose to show costly love and compassion to the people that you despise, the outcasts, the sinners, the lowlife, and if we choose to love them enough to restore them, give them new life, then you should be celebrating, not condemning and complaining. And I think Jesus was probably saying to some of those, quote, sinners around him who were listening, he was saying, and it really doesn't matter how far you've gone away from God. Come back to him. Come back to the Father. Come back to Jesus. And you'll find a welcome that you never expected. But my story isn't over, because Jesus wasn't finished. Because there we are, you see, we're back up in those upper rooms of my house. I told you they were pretty big, and so we had lots of crowds in. We were having this great party. I hired the local music band. There was music and drumming and dancing, lots of roast beef to share, plenty of wine, kids playing out there in the courtyard. Great time. Everybody was so amazed at what I'd done. Some of them were even gracious enough to congratulate me, although some of them were a bit perturbed. And at any moment, of course, I expected my older son to arrive. I knew that he'd been out in the fields. I thought, well, in a moment he'll come in and he'll kiss all the guests one by one in greeting and apologize for being late and for his working clothes. And then he'll go off and wash and put on some fresh clothes and come back and join the party too. But then I heard a commotion outside in the courtyard downstairs. And it was my older son's unmistakable voice, raised high, even above the music that we were listening to, because he had this rather unpleasant way I didn't really like of shouting at everybody, especially the slaves and servants. What's going on here? He shouted. And everybody in the room upstairs heard, because they all knew his voice too. They knew him. And the music sort of faded away and it all went a bit quiet. And I heard one of the lads outside tell him, well, actually, your brother has come back and your father has killed the fatted calf because he's been restored and reconciled, and your father wants you to come in too and celebrate with him. And then I heard my older son explode with anger. No, he yelled, I will not go in. My father is stark raving mad to do this, he said. No, I won't. And of course, everybody could hear. This was, again, desperately embarrassing for me. And they were embarrassed for me too, because this was an insult yet another insult for me as a father, this time from the good boy. The boy that everybody thought was doing what I wanted. And here he was insulting me in my own home in the hearing of the whole village. So what should I do again? What would they expect? They probably thought that I would tell the servants to go and overpower him, to lock him in one of the inner rooms in the house so we could give him a good thrashing in the morning and warn him never to speak like that to me again. But I didn't. Because see, I loved that boy too. Did I tell you I loved my sons? I loved him too. And so for the second time that day, from the morning to the evening, I chose the costly path of humiliation. And with all eyes on me in that room, I left and I went down the stairs and I went outside to him, just as I'd gone outside the town early in the morning to my younger son. And rather than demanding from him an immediate apology, I pleaded with him to come in. He had insulted me, but I was pleading with him, when really it should have been him who was pleading with me not to punish him. But he was raging. He was yelling. And still everybody could hear. Look, he said. Didn't even call me father. Look, he said. All these years I've been slaving away for you like a servant. I've kept all the rules you set, but you've never paid me a penny. You've never given me a goat for a party. I mean, why did I even need to pay him? He was my son, not a servant. And my whole estate belonged to him eventually when I would... Did he want me dead too? It seemed that all this time, there he was in my house, but he didn't think of himself as a son, but as a servant. He was just as lost as my younger son. There he was, obeying me, not because he loved me, but because he thought he had to, because he thought he had to earn something from me. And now he was angry because I wasn't giving him what he thought he deserved as the good boy. And then he shouted more. He said, but when this son of yours, not his own brother, this son of yours comes back, who has squandered your money, a third of our estate, on prostitutes. And I thought, where'd he get that from? I mean, I know my younger son has been living it up and spending all my money, but I'd never heard that he'd sunk to sleeping with Gentile prostitutes. My elder son was making that up, I'm sure. What he was trying to do was to really ruin the reputation of my brother so badly, of my son so badly, and me, that nobody would ever accept him or marry him or anything like that. That's how much he hated both his brother and me. And he went on, but when he comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. Which wasn't really true, because we weren't celebrating my son. The party wasn't in his honor. The party was for me. It was in honor of the father who had restored him and given him his life back. I had called the village together to celebrate and accept what I had done. I had forgiven him. I'd given him his family back. I'd reconciled him and restored him and rescued him. So it was essential that there should be a celebration. But my elder son's anger was terrible and insulting. So wrong. But I tried to stay calm. I said, my dear child, I said, I actually used the word, not just son, I used the word for a dear, loved little child. I said, you've been with me all this time. You know that the whole estate is going to be yours in the end, but we have to celebrate here. I know that your brother doesn't deserve my love and my forgiveness any more than you deserve all that you get from me already, or that you have to somehow work for it. Because, son, it's not about who deserves what. It's all about my love and my grace and my choice, because I'm your father. And it's about my willingness to humiliate myself, first for his sake and now also for yours. Listen to those guests upstairs. Because that's who I am. That's my character. That's how much I love you. And I'm sorry if my love is such an embarrassment to you. But of course, I'm speaking for Jesus again, aren't I? Which is okay, because he invented me to do that. And he was still speaking to those religious people, those people who'd never gone away anywhere. They'd never broken the rules, but they couldn't accept Jesus eating with the people they called sinners. And so Jesus was saying to them, look, one son went off and broke all the rules and rejected the love and authority of his father. But the other son stayed inside and kept all the rules, but he behaved like a slave. He never really enjoyed a relationship with his father because he thought he had to deserve it. So both sons were lost. One was lost far away, and the other was lost right here in his own home. But one has now come back, and I have restored him with costly, self-humbling love, bearing the disgrace and the shame that should have been his. So I've reconciled him to myself, and that's why I'm eating with him now. And if you won't come and eat with him, then you can't eat with me either, and I can't eat with you. I wish I could go on. I wish I could give you a happy ending to my story. I wish I could say, so the older brother embraced his father and came in and was reconciled to his brother, and they had a great party and they all lived happily ever after. But I can't, because Jesus didn't. So Jesus, he didn't actually end the story, did he? He just stopped. He just stopped, leaving me, the father, standing there in the courtyard outside the house, wondering what my son is going to do. And of course, it's precisely what Jesus was doing. He was forcing those religious people, those real people, to decide what they were going to do and how they might end the story for themselves. Well, I got to go soon because now the story has stopped. But before I do, maybe this is what Jesus wanted me to say. Here we all are in God's house, and we're all different. And maybe there are some who've gone far away. Maybe you just came to church this evening for some reason that you don't really understand. Maybe you have broken a lot of the rules. Maybe you've been living as if God were dead and wasted a lot of your life doing that, and still empty and hungry. And to you, if that is you, Jesus says, come back. Come home. Turn around. Repent. And know that the moment you turn back to God, you'll find God running towards you with open arms, your heavenly Father and his Son, Jesus. But maybe, perhaps most of us, maybe there are those of us who never left. We kept all the rules. We did all this good God stuff, but every now and again we get so angry because God isn't paying us what we think we deserve from all that good behavior. And life gets tough, and God doesn't cut you a fair deal, and somehow or other the people who don't deserve anything from God are having a party, it seems. And it looks like you're part of the family, and yet you're resentful and you're angry, and you're inside, you're thinking of God not as your loving father, but as an unfair boss and employer. And to you, Jesus says, come in. Like the older son should have done. Stop trying to earn or deserve from God what you never can. Because God's love and God's grace is free, and it's for you. If you will come, join the Father's party, welcome those whom he welcomes, eat with those that he eats with. Well, I got to go. The story's told, but I'll be back. I'll come to life again in your mind and your memories whenever you hear that story that Jesus told again. And in the meantime, I hope you'll listen and understand why Jesus invented me, and listen to what he said and what I said. Thank you.